coming to you from deep inside the bowels of a great big empty. Get ready for another episode of The Home Defense Show with Skip Coriel.
Hello, American families. Welcome to this week's episode of The Home Defense Show. I'm your host, Skip Coriel. And if you love your family, care about them deeply, and want to learn how to protect them in every facet of your life, then you've come to the right place. We've got a great show for you today, and I know that you're going to love it. In segments 2 and 3 today, we are going to be speaking with a man named Peter Heck. He is a public school teacher in Kokomo, Indiana, and he's going to be talking to us about challenges that teenagers face today and what would possibly drive them to become an active shooter. And he's going to talk to us as well about maybe the root causes and maybe some of the possible fixes. But before we get to that, I have a story to tell you. For the first time in my life, I was a victim of Grand Theft Auto. That's right, just a few days ago, I was downtown Grand Rapids, and I was at Wood Radio, you know, with the Colonel Denny Gillum, and we were recording Front Lines of Freedom radio show, like we do every Wednesday afternoon. And I had just bought a new car. Well, new to me. It was a brand spanking new 2009 Honda Pilot. I know, 2009, that was 9 years ago, but it was new to me, in good shape. And I got a good deal on it. It was like $14,000, which I'm going to be paying for, you know, a while. But, boy, I love this car. It's four-wheel drive, and it looks like new leather seats, heated seats, all the things an old man with a bad back really likes. And so, you know, I park in the parking ramp like I always do. It's like a 10-level parking ramp. And I go up to the 9th floor and record the radio show, had a good time. And then I come back down, and I walk over to where my car's supposed to be, and there's no car. And I look around, I can't see it anywhere, and I've only had this car for 2 weeks. And I thought, oh, you know, you hear about this kind of thing happening, but it's not supposed to happen to me. And so I thought, well, maybe I'm in the wrong spot, and maybe I'm not remembering correctly. So I walked around all over, and I walked the entire level twice, and I thought, well, maybe I wasn't on this level. Maybe I didn't remember right. So I walked up another level, walked all around that one twice, couldn't find the vehicle at all. And I thought, well, let me go back down to the bottom. So I went back to the first level and went all the way up to the fourth level, and I knew I hadn't parked up beyond the fourth level. So, and I checked every single car. There were two Honda Pilots in all four of those levels. And, you know, one was burgundy and the other one was black, and mine is silver. So, wow. I even tried my key in one of them just to make sure. But my heart just sank. I was so discouraged. I said, Lord, what are you doing to me? You know, I finally get a decent car. My old car, my Honda Odyssey minivan, when we bought it, it was great, but we put 272,000 miles on that, and it was getting ready to surrender to life. So I thought, well, probably sooner I call the police, the better off it's going to be. Maybe they'll get it back. So I pull out my cell phone. It's at 4%, so I start to dial, and it goes dead. Then I go, oh, wow. Okay, someone stole my new car and my cell phone's dead. Oh, great. So I went back to the radio studio, go up to the 9th floor, and I had to borrow a phone from, you know, one of the producers up there to call 911 and then to call my wife. But, you know, I called 911 first and got them on it and said, well, we'll send a unit, you know, meet us on the first floor and we'll take a report. And then I had to call my wife, and of course, Sarah never picks up the phone. So I left a message saying, oh, yeah, honey, everything's okay. Don't worry about it. I'm going to be a little late tonight because someone stole our car. But don't worry, everything else is fine. And so then I go down to the first floor again, and I'm waiting for the police to get there. Plugged in my computer, sent out a few emails. I still haven't charged up my cell phone by now because the charging cord is in my car, which has been stolen. And the police didn't come, and it had been like half an hour, and I thought, well, maybe they're over there waiting for me in the parking ramp. So I walked over to the parking ramp, and I didn't see them anywhere. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to walk from the first level all the way up to the 10th level because I'm 60 years old. Maybe I'm just getting so ditzy that I can't remember where I parked. So I started on the first level, and I walked slowly, checking every vehicle. First, second, third, fourth, fifth, all the way up to the very top. And then I went all the way back down. And I did not see the vehicle anywhere. So I went back over to the studio to see if the police were there. They weren't there. Waited another 10 minutes or so. And then I said, well, I'll walk back to the parking ramp. And I walked back to the parking ramp. And I got outside the door, and I look straight ahead, and there's my car. And I go, hold it. How? What's happening? It wasn't there before. And I walked over to it, and then I remembered, oh, that's right. I did park it here. I felt... and still do feel like such an idiot. I must have walked past that car 5 or 6 times, and I didn't see it. I just didn't recognize it because it wasn't where I thought it should be. And I'd only had it for 2 weeks, so it didn't look familiar to me. And my key fob battery had died. So, you know, otherwise I could just push the panic button or something and find it. But, you know, it was just terrible. So, you know, I get in the car and I go ahead and plug in my cell phone, and it's dead. And I thought, well, I'll wait till it charges up because I don't want to drive around a stolen car. And so I went ahead and I waited 10 minutes and it still wouldn't work. So I got to get home. So I pulled out, you know, thinking, oh my gosh, it's going to be a felony stop. They're going to, you know, stop my vehicle and you know, point guns at me and handcuff me and all this stuff. But I made it out of Grand Rapids. And then the cell phone finally got charged up enough. So I called back up Grand Rapids Police Department and apologized, you know, for all the trouble because units were dispatched and all that. And it was just embarrassing. And then I had to calm my wife down because I'd already told her that our car was stolen. So it was a really rough day. But thank God my car wasn't really stolen, and I just have Alzheimer's apparently. But I'm glad to have my car back. It was good. Well, let's go ahead and enough personal life, enough poor memory. Let's go ahead and let's find out what's in the news today. Okay, we are at bearingarms.com. Since we're going to be talking about school shootings and school security and public school kids and public school teachers, I thought let's look at this latest school shooting. There's one every week. This is breaking down the Great Mills High School shooting. Another school shooting took place early Tuesday morning at Great Mills High School in Great Mills, Maryland. The shooter, a 17-year-old high school student, who will not be named, injured a 16-year-old girl and a 14-year-old boy. Since this article came out, I believe the girl just died today. The gunman has died and the female student remains in critical condition. Due to the courage of the school's resource officer, they call those an SRO, Deputy First Class Blaine Gaskell, the gunman was not able to harm more students. According to statements from law enforcement officials, the school resource officer pursued the shooter and fired one round. The gunman fired simultaneously, but the shot did not strike the SRO. It is unclear if the SRO fatally shot the gunman or if the gunman took his own life. Well, you know, what this says to me is when the school resource officer does his job, it mitigates the damage that an active shooter can do. Because you remember the Parkland massacre down in Florida. That was a massacre because the school resource officer was hiding outside to save his own skin. So, you know, what good does it do to have a school resource officer if they don't do their job? This guy did his job, and it was, you know, about the best that you could outcome that you could hope for. All right. While all the details of the shooting are not yet known, politicians are saying action needs to be taken to prevent further school shootings. Well, yeah, we can all agree on that. Yeah, they're saying Congress must act. Well, I'm inclined to think that Congress shouldn't act. Every time they act, makes it worse. Okay. But it's not clear what action or gun control legislation would have prevented this attack from happening. In the state of Maryland, assault weapons, which includes assault long guns, assault pistols, or copycat weapons, are all banned, though this fact is irrelevant considering a semi-automatic rifle was not used in this attack. Maryland law and federal law also state that it is unlawful for any person to sell or transfer a handgun to a person whom he knows or has reasonable cause to believe is under 21. This kid was 17. Now, I believe he got this gun, the shooter got this gun from his father. Maybe it wasn't locked up properly, or he had the combination to the safe, or whatever. In this shooting, gun control laws would not have been effective in preventing the attack. Well, the gun control laws were already there. It's illegal for him to have this gun. You know, I think, you know, we're going to talk about this with Peter Heck coming up in the next segment. And we're going to find out what a school teacher thinks should be done to curb this kind of violence. I don't think gun control laws are going to help. An active shooter, by definition, he doesn't care about any law, period. This is what criminals do. They're crazy, they're insane, they're mean, they're evil, filled with rage. They're not going to care about a gun law. The only thing that gun laws do is restrict the freedoms of good people like you and I. So we need to resist all these calls for gun laws. Well, that's about all the time we have here in segment one. I hope you enjoyed, you know, me eating crow about with my bad memory and forgetting where I'd parked my car and not even recognizing it. But hey, I'm just glad to have it back. When we come back, we're going to be speaking with Peter Heck. If you want a heads up on that, go to peterheck.com. That's H-E-C-K, peterheck.com. Find out about Peter. Super duper guy. You're going to like him. Also go to our sponsors, firearmslegal.com/MidwestTactical, and then elitefirearms.us, and find out about the good things they do for all of us. Okay, when we come back, Peter Heck. This is Skip Coriel on Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
My name is Siege Coriel. Welcome to the Home Defense Show with my dad, Skip Coriel. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
This is Skip Coriel from the Home Defense Show, and I want you to have the very best handgun that money can buy. And that's why we recommend you visit Larry Jackson at Elite Firearms and Training. As a concealed carry instructor, I see people every week out on the range with guns they can't shoot properly because they didn't know what to buy. That will never happen at Elite Firearms and Training. Larry Jackson will personally fit you with your very own personal defense pistol. So call Larry Jackson today at 616-299-8715 or visit elitefirearms.us.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. I host Front Lines of Freedom, a weekly syndicated military talk radio show. One of my co-hosts is Skip Coriel, the host of this show. We cover things that impact military and veteran communities, and we do it from the veteran's perspective. The show is broadcast across the nation and is also available as a podcast on our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please join Skip and me weekly on Front Lines of Freedom.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. There's your host, Skip Coriel. These next two segments, we have a very exciting guest. I have been listening to this guy online for, many months. His name is Peter Heck. Peter, welcome to the Home Defense Show.
Thanks very much, Skip, for having me. I appreciate it and the opportunity. Glad we could finally connect.
Oh, yeah. You know, two busy guys, it's hard these days, you know? But
it is.
You know, folks, for those of you who don't know Peter, go to peterheck.com. There's a lot of good stuff, and the last name is spelled H-E-C-K, just like in the naughty word, heck.
So, yep. What the?
You know, you must have taken a little bit, as a kid, a little bit of razzing about that last name.
Oh, just a tidbit. I always say, though, that God gave me the sense of humor he knew that I would have to go through high school years with the last name of X. So, yeah, it served me well.
Well, Peter, for my listeners who don't know you yet, please tell us about all things Peter Heck. Who the heck is Peter Heck?
Well, I'm a high school teacher, public high school teacher, and have been for... I always remember it's 17 years because my first year in the classroom was the year 9/11 happened in 2001. Mm. So I'd been in the classroom a month when 9/11 occurred, and so that was, they don't really teach those kinds of things in teacher college, but it was it's the way that I always remember when my teaching career actually began. So hard to believe, but it's been 17 years. I love it. I love the interaction with the kids. I started off thinking that this would be my lifelong occupation, then started a radio program not long after that, commenting on cultural and social issues, and did that for about 10 years, which is where the website developed and the writing started. And I let the radio thing go a few years ago. It just got to be too much with the family, but still do a significant amount of writing online and for some newspapers, and then do a podcast and a lot of public speaking. So God certainly surprised me with the doors that he's opened, but trying to make him famous in whatever avenue that that opens up.
Yeah. Now, recently you renamed your newsletter that you send out to, A Case of the Mondays.
Yeah. Yeah. We started a video newsletter just based on... some of the feedback that I'd gotten from folks and what they appreciated and what, you know, they would sometimes overlook. And I thought that it might be unique to do just a weekly commentary on how we can, as Christians, look at the world through the eyes of faith and try to rise above the circumstances. A lot of times it's easy to get sucked down into the circumstances of life, but we as Christians don't have to live under the circumstances. We live above them because that's where Christ is. And so how can we look at even the frustrating things of the world and put that positive Christian spin that really can be intoxicating to folks that are mired in the worldly sorrow that surrounds us?
Peter, you're a Christian and you're in the public school.
Right.
What kind of challenges are there in that? Because there must be a few.
There are. It's especially doing what I do outside of school. I'm very conscious of the laws and the regulations about what is done and what's not done. And I've always said to folks, you know, laws can forbid a person from preaching the name of Jesus in school, and I certainly am going to be respectful of lawful authority in that regard, but the laws certainly don't preclude anyone from showing the love of Christ on a daily basis. And a lot of these kids I try to foster strong relationships with all of them. They know what I do outside of school, and so because of that, it opens up opportunities for conversations and kids that will come in outside of school hours and say, listen, I know that you're a believer, and I've got questions about things. And so I really see this as every year I get a new congregation of kids, and even though I'm not preaching the word to them, I can certainly live it and then be there as a sounding board for them as they go through things that, to be honest, Skip, I can't imagine some of the circumstances that kids are dealing with now. I can't imagine going through the dating life with a cell phone and all of the temptations that come with the smartphone. There's great things that come in the internet age, but whereas pornography, you used to have to go into a back room in a questionable bookstore to be able to access that stuff. And now it's just one click away for these kids and godly kids that can easily be ensnared by that. And so certainly trying to be a light in an increasingly dark culture. And that's, you know, that's evident here in the high school kids that come from in increasingly common broken homes and situations that, again, I can't imagine having to deal with just to be a constant in their life and something that, is there when they need it and if they need it. That's I've certainly found it to be a ministry, and I love it. I enjoy that opportunity. Heartbreaking sometimes, but, at the same time, I think that it's an important role, and I want believers to be there. So
yeah.
I thank God for that opportunity.
Yeah, it really is a mission field. You don't know my background. I'm a Christian as well from Michigan. You are from Kokomo, Indiana. Yes, 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 Virginia, there is a Kokomo.
Yeah, it's funny. Everybody knows the name Kokomo because of the Beach Boys song, but that's about a tropical island, and this place is anything but tropical.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you that much.
Oh, that's for sure. We're speaking with Peter Heck from peterheck.com. Now, Peter, it really is a mission field where you're at.
Yeah.
Even though, I don't know, maybe in one regard, it's like going to a Muslim country as a Christian ministry. You have to be careful what you say and what you do, but it doesn't make it any less important. I think it's probably more important. I'm 60 years old now, so when I grew up, things were not the way they are now. Even for you, Peter, you must be getting close to 40 now. It was 25 years ago. It was a lot different than it is today. Technology seems to have changed everything. What are some of the things that have changed that make it so hard to be a teenager?
Well, gosh, we could spend days on that. What I was alluding to earlier about, I tell the kids sometimes, when I got into teaching, I tell them this, my whole purpose was, the reason I got into teaching were those notes that you kids used to write to each other and you would drop on the floor and I could grab up and read out loud and embarrass the kid. And now you don't do that anymore. It's all the texting and things like that. And I say it jokingly, but I honestly believe, Skip, that we have never been so connected as a people, but never communicated less.
Yeah.
We now 140 characters or less, or whatever it is now, 260, whatever Twitter is now. But that's how much we can invest in another person and getting to know them and who they are and what they think. And I think that has some really negative consequences on the establishment of strong personal relationships, because when you lack those and when you can reduce a person to their Twitter bio and that's who they are, you're less empathetic with that person. You're less understanding of a different philosophy that they have. And there's real danger that comes in that for not just a local community, but our culture at large. And so I think, whereas technology, there's so many wonderful things, and I wouldn't want to live in any other era, although the Andy Griffith era has always appealed to me, I truly wouldn't want to live in another time. It's still just as in every era, and this is what I try to remind Christians, we're not in any place that God's people haven't been before. You read Romans, you read Corinthians, and there's Paul writing to Christians who were living in the midst of a very ungodly, pluralistic culture, and that's where we are. So if Noah can stand on the steps of the ark for 100 years and preach righteousness and never get a single convert and be mocked the entire time, I don't know why I should expect the world to treat me any better. So I think we need to keep in mind, even as the culture changes around us for the negative, God's called us for such a time and such a place as this, and he expects us to be faithful. And I take that as a privilege more than I do looking at it as a challenge and a frustration. Not to say that there aren't frustrating times, but you keep your eyes on things above, and you realize what I got to do this 60 years, and then I get to go live with him. I think that's a pretty sweet deal.
60 years. I'm kind of hoping for more than 60. since I am 60, I'm thinking maybe 80. But don't say.
I guess I meant 60 more years.
Oh, good, good, good.
So if I'm shooting for that. My grandma just died last year, and she was 105. So I'm thinking I might have those genes. Even though I'm not sure, I really want to live that long. But we'll see. We'll let God handle that.
Well, Peter, you know, you're talking about, you know, just the lack of one-on-one FaceTime where people actually sit down and talk to one another using words in their voice. In one regard, that makes it more potent what you have to offer. When you sit down with a kid who has a problem or whatever and you're talking one-on-one with them, that's got to mean more than maybe it did 20 years ago.
Yeah, and that's something that I don't even... Until you say something like that, I don't even pause to consider, but it's true. And you will find that with a personal anecdote. And I think I mentioned this in one of the Case of the Mondays videos, but a child that, you know, I've had in class for 2 years, and I shouldn't call him a child. He's 17 years old, but he was coming down the hallway. I'd never seen this kid smile in 2 years. And, you know, I try my best to use my best Jerry Seinfeld in class and get him laughing about stuff and establish that rapport. But he was just a kid I couldn't reach. And this kid had the biggest smile on his face as he's coming down the hallway. And I yelled at him, I said, what are you all giddy about? You got a date or what? And he kind of chuckled and said, I'll tell you later. And sure enough, he came back after that class and popped his head in. And I said, all right, I got to know what it is that has you all excited. And kid looked at me and said, I get to see my mom this weekend. And I knew his dad had been in prison for drugs. And he told me the whole story. He said, you know, my mom has been struggling to stay clean, but she just got out of rehab and we're going to have supper tonight and everything. And it hit me. This is a kid that goes and he lives with a distant relative. He may not have any communication with anybody when he leaves this school building. And he is at the peak of his excitement because he gets to do something that I took for granted every day when I was his age, going home and talking to mom and dad. And, you know, he doesn't even have the dad factor there, too. But so you're right. But also in other environments, too. We have to take that into consideration. The people that we're dealing with, who knows but what we're not the only Christ, the only Jesus, the only voice that they are getting to listen to and to hear them when they're talking as well.
Yeah. Yeah, we're speaking with Peter Heck from peterheck.com. Peter, when we come back, we've got about a two-minute break here. When we come back, what I want to talk about is, you know, you've got a window into a world that most of us never see. You know, we're out of high school now. We don't know what it's like there. We don't know what's going on. But there's this proliferation of, I don't know, immorality, it seems like, lack of accountability, you know, active shooter events. I mean, all these things.
Yeah.
And when we come back, I'd like to get your take on that because you see things and know things that we don't. So we'll come back in 2 minutes. While we're away, check out our sponsors, firearmslegal.com/Midwest Tactical, and then go into elitefirearms.us. Check them out. This is Skip Coriel on the Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
This is Phoenix Coriel on the Home Defense Show. Always use guns safely and wisely. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Hey folks, I want to tell you about my book, Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book. More and more people across the country are seeing the dangers in society and are deciding to carry concealed to protect themselves and their families. My new book lays it out step by step. It'll teach you how to protect and defend the ones you love. Get the benefit of 17 years of teaching experience and a lifetime of training for this important role in society and in your family. You can get Civilian Combat real easy. Just go to Amazon.com, search on Skip Coriel, Civilian Combat, and it'll pop right up there. Don't put it off any longer. Get Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book by yours truly.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if life was like the movies and the good guys always won? In today's world, if you're forced to use your firearm to protect yourself, you will need protection. Firearms Legal Protection is here for you. FLP provides you with seasoned, experienced attorneys that handle your criminal and civil matters as a result of you protecting yourself. FirearmsLegal.com provides its members with uncapped attorney's fees, bail bond protection, and coverage in all 50 states. We are not a reimbursement plan. You can access uncapped attorney's fees for as low as $10 a month. Firearms Legal members are provided with educational services, training videos, and access to our vast national attorney network. While you're protecting yourself, let Firearms Legal protect you.
Listen up, folks. This is important. There are plenty of legal protection services out there, but none will protect you as well as Firearms Legal Protection. This is the one I use and the only one I recommend. Visit firearmslegal.com/MidwestTactical and protect your family now. This is Skip Coriel on the Home Defense Show. We are speaking with Peter Heck from PeterHeck.com. Peter, boy, talk to us about, you know, the changes that are happening with kids and the dynamics and what's going on inside them. You know, we've got all these active shooter events that seem to be happening on a weekly, maybe even a daily basis. What happened? Because when we were kids, it didn't happen. What's going on?
Right. Well, I think you made a really good point, and I think that this conversation becomes so politicized, but a lot of times it's an emotional conversation, and what I always try to stress to people, you know, I know, everybody knows, when you're trying to make a rational, sound judgment, the one thing that you keep out of the equation is emotion, because emotion clouds reason. It's why we get unbiased juries and people that don't know the accused or don't know about the crime, because it's just common sense that if you have an emotional tie to an event or to a person, that's going to cloud your judgment. So whenever emotion starts creeping into these conversations, it really harms our ability to think through this logically. And when you think through this logically, what has changed? The presence of guns on school campus used to be common. Kids would come to school with guns, their gun rack in the back of their pickup truck, or teachers the same way. So the ready availability of firearms, that hasn't changed in these last few years. So what has changed? And this, I think, gets to the heart of what we're seeing when a culture begins down a path of moral and spiritual decay. Then you're going to see immoral actions take place. And this is what our founders understood, and I'm really, really passionate about this. If you read what they're saying, you've got that famous John Adams quote that says, "We have no government armed with power capable of contending with human passions unbridled by religion and morality." In other words, what he's saying is there's no government big enough to stop crime. You can hire a police officer to follow a single person around wherever they go, and if they want to commit a crime, the government can respond to the crime and punish the crime, but it can't prevent it. So the only thing that's going to keep people obeying and not mistreating and abusing their freedoms is if they have an internal moral restraint. Edmund Burke said that the less restraint there is within, the more there has to be without. And he goes on to say, you know, an immoral people can't be free. Their passions will forge their fetters. Yeah. And this is the point that I try to make to people. What have we seen? At the time of our founding, there were no gun laws. There were no child labor laws. There were no drug laws. And that's not because our founders were a bunch of gun-toting stoners that wanted to abuse kids. It's because they didn't need those laws. Yeah. But what happened was, as our people began to lose moral conviction, then people started abusing those same freedoms, because they saw it as an avenue that they could take advantage of. So they start abusing their firearms privileges. And what do people who are abused by those individuals do? They cry out to government for a law to protect them. And the government responds and responds and responds, and it keeps writing more laws to protect all these people. Well, when the government writes a law, what do you and I lose? We lose our freedom. So as morality decays in a culture, government has to grow to fill in that gap and try to fix the problem. But when government grows, freedom disappears. And that's what the founders were so keen on. And it is amazing to me that the same people who are constantly trying to drive religious conviction and talk of religious morality from the public square are then the same ones that want to turn around and respond with more government to solve the problem. These aren't champions of freedom. The two go hand in hand. And I think when you are training young people, I'm sorry, I'm filibustering you here, but when you're training young people to believe that human life has no value, that it's nothing but a cosmic accident with no ultimate purpose, when you teach them that murdering an infant is a choice, when you teach them that killing off the unwanted elderly is justifiable and humane, when you teach them that suicide is okay as long as it's assisted by a physician, well, you're embedding in their minds that life means nothing, that there's no ultimate value. So how can we be surprised when we see the logical outworking of this type of thing? The problem, and you know this as well as I do, the problem isn't the gun. The problem is the immoral actor using this weapon. And of course, it totally makes it easier for an immoral person to destroy more lives when they have a more powerful firearm. There's no question about that. But if you're really wanting to solve the problem, you either confiscate every gun on the face of the earth, which is obviously impossible, or you have to get to root causes. And I think that we're ignoring those root causes for the sake of political bickering, and it's not going to get any better.
Yeah, boy, we are speaking.
I'm
Skip.
Sorry. Yeah, you got me going, and then I just couldn't stop. So I apologize.
Well, you know, it's obvious to me. We're speaking with Peter Heck from PeterHeck.com on the Home Defense Show. Peter, you've given this some thought. Not only have you thought about it, but you've organized some cohesive, coherent ideas on what in defining the problem. And obviously, you know, I guess I see the problem, you know, the same way that you do. It's a long-term problem. It took us many decades
yes.
to get where we are right now. So you're not going to fix it by passing a law. You know, it's
right.
going to take generations to get back. I mean, we have to reestablish the family, the importance of the family,
exactly
interpersonal relationships, all of that stuff. But that's going to take many decades, and the American people have to actually want it.
Right.
You know, and I'm not sure that they do, or if they even realize what the problem is. I mean, us older folks probably understand a little more, but the kids growing up who are 15, 20 years old, they've never known anything different than what they know right now. They have no perspective. What hope do they have?
Exactly right. Exactly right. And barring, this isn't something that gets solved top down. It can't. And that's why what you're saying is exactly right. I was talking to another gentleman in the pro-family movement yesterday, and the acknowledgement that this has to begin in our homes, in our churches, in our communities. And when those start to reestablish some of these principles, then we start to see lawmakers who are simply going to follow whatever the path of popularity is, what's going to get them elected. Well, you have to change the people's view before you're going to change the politicians then. And so, yeah, it is a multi-generational thing, and that can be frustrating. But I guess my question to folks is, do you have something better to do with your time than invest in this? I may not see the end result of it, but I certainly want to play a part in it. And if this culture and this society and this country, if it means anything to us, then why wouldn't we dedicate ourselves to at least in whatever? I always like to think of God as a master chess player, and he's put us exactly in the places where we need to be. And if we all do our job and we're faithful to him and his principles, you know, we can trust in him for the consequences and the results, however long that may take.
Yeah, what you're talking about, you're using the G word, and you're in a public school.
yeah, I haven't been struck by lightning yet. Maybe it's not lightning. It'd be the ACLU lawsuit would be more likely than lightning. So,
well, you know, it just seems, you know, God has a grand plan. I think Satan has a grand plan, too. I mean,
he does.
And he's pretty wily guy. I mean, he knew
yeah.
that if he got God out of the schools, that he could public discourse. People aren't talking about God. Kids aren't learning about God. you know, when you get rid of God, you get rid of morality, you get rid of self-respect, respect for other people, all of these things. And that's what's happened. And it's taken decades and decades for that to happen. Peter, go ahead.
I got to finish because of what you just said, this perfect tie-in. George Washington, father of the nation, reason and experience forbid us to expect that national morality will prevail in exclusion of religious principle. When you take religious principle out of the equation, national morality will collapse. And then you follow up with what Adam said, if national morality collapses, freedom goes right along with it. So the founders, they had faults. They're not gods, but my goodness, they were spot on with some of this. And I think we're in good... in a good place if we're following in their footsteps and reiterating some of their wisdom.
Yeah. Now, you teach what, history and social studies stuff, correct?
Yeah. Teach American government and American history. You bet.
Well, how do you teach about the founding fathers without talking about God?
Right. And I don't hesitate to... We very, very seldom use a textbook. We use primary source documents. Now, I gave them the benefit of seeing the modern translations of those primary source documents, so they don't have to read Alexander Hamilton in his 18th century dialect. But it's still, we use the modern translation of the Federalist Papers and those things. And if somebody's going to sue me because they're reading the words of George Washington when he happens to mention God, then that's a lawsuit I'm willing to endure.
Yeah. Well, hey. We're going to be persecuted if we're doing the right thing. If no one
right.
complains about what you're doing, you're probably not doing anything.
You got it right.
Well, Peter, we're almost out of time. I know you have to go back to teaching here, but one final thing. You know, long-term is generational. Short-term, kids coming in, shooting up the school. One thing that even Trump was talking about is arming teachers. You're a teacher. What would it look like for you to be armed, to have one of your students come in, start shooting kids? You would have to, you'd have to kill that person.
It's hard to even imagine that. I do work with a number of folks who have concealed carry permits and who are trained with firearms. And I think any kind of responsible discussion in that regard, we obviously need to be talking about teachers who are willing to go through the training and willing to handle a firearm responsibly. I don't like the idea of drafting teachers into something like that.
Yeah.
I don't think that would go well. But certainly in the short term that we're talking about, the most important, and right after the shooting in Parkland, I wrote another column, as I seem to after all of these, that said, listen, we're going to argue about guns, and that's fine, and we can get to that. But in the short term, let's do some immediate things to protect our schools. I walk into a courthouse, and when I do that, it doesn't matter what courthouse it is, there's one entrance. It is a guarded entrance. There's metal detectors. And I know people think, well, that's going to turn our schools into forts. Well, if our lawmakers are worthy of the protection that we afford with armed guards and security measures of that nature, aren't our kids worth the same? So I think that school security is something that really needs to be addressed, and then we can continue this perpetual gun debate that isn't going to go anywhere in the time being, at least.
Yeah, I think you're right. There are some things that we all can agree on, but all these politicians, they say, okay, I'll give you this, but you give me what I want, and they won't agree with each other. So, hey, you can certainly agree on metal detectors or maybe a security guard or something that will
and
mitigate.
Locking doors, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's one entrance for the school building and the other doors are locked. I mean, these are common sense things that we spend a lot of money on a lot of stuff, and I would argue probably not worth nearly as much as some of those kind of investments.
Yeah, I would agree. Peter Heck, you are indeed on the front lines in public school system. Who knew that it would actually be a battlefield? You probably thought you were just going to go there and teach.
That was the original plan, but that's all right. We'll respond accordingly.
All right. Peter, how can people get a hold of you and learn more about Peter Heck and your ministry?
Sure. The website is the best way to go, which is peterheck.com, and there's some other websites that are tied to that they can navigate, but that's the central hub. And then I write daily over at The Resurgent, which is just theresurgent.com, and would love to connect with any of your listeners. If they want to shoot me an email, I always try to respond to those personally, and sometimes it takes me a while, as you well know, but eventually it happens.
All right. Okay, Peter, this has been fantastic. Thank you very much for coming on the
Thank
Home Defense Show.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, folks, take another 2-minute break. Go out, check out our sponsors. Go to peterheck.com and find out about all things Peter Heck. This is Skip Coriel on the Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Welcome to my dad's Home Defense Radio Show. You're gonna love it.
Hey folks, I want to tell you about my book, Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book. More and more people across the country are seeing the dangers in society and are deciding to carry concealed to protect themselves and their families. My new book lays it out step by step. It'll teach you how to protect and defend the ones you love. Get the benefit of 17 years of teaching experience and a lifetime of training for this important role in society and in your family. You can get Civilian Combat real easy. Just go to Amazon.com, search on Skip Coriel, Civilian Combat, and it'll pop right up there. Don't put it off any longer. Get Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book by yours truly, Skip Coriel.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. I host Frontlines of Freedom, a weekly syndicated military talk radio show. One of my co-hosts is Skip Coriel, the host of this show. We cover things that impact military and veteran communities, and we do it from the veteran's perspective. The show is broadcast across the nation and is also available as a podcast on our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please join Skip and me weekly on Frontlines of Freedom.
This is Skip Coriel from the Home Defense Show, and I want you to have the very best handgun that money can buy. And that's why we recommend you visit Larry Jackson at Elite Firearms and Training. As a concealed carry instructor, I see people every week out on the range with guns they can't shoot properly because they didn't know what to buy. That will never happen at Elite Firearms and Training. Larry Jackson will personally fit you with your very own personal defense pistol. So call Larry Jackson today at 616-299-8715 or visit elitefirearms.us.
Skip, it's time for the Armed America Report. Do it, dude.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, early one Saturday morning in Columbia Township, Ohio, a homeowner and his wife received a shocking wake-up call. Two intruders entered their home just after 3 a.m. The woman and the 14-month-old baby retreated to a back room as the man confronted both home invaders with a hammer. Struggling against them, the man ran outside to his car and managed to retrieve his firearm. He returned to the house and shot both of them. Quote, "The only thing going through my mind is, if they try to do something to me, then there's nobody to protect my wife and son." And that's what he told local media. Both intruders were taken to the hospital after police arrived at the home.
Thanks, Colonel. I saw some good things going on here, so let's go over those things first. Number one, the instinct for a man to protect his home should be strong and unyielding, and I applaud this man for his warrior mindset and his ability to keep fighting until his family was safe. Even though he was outnumbered, he attacked the threat and fought until he'd won. Two, before fighting, he sent his wife and child to a safer location. They probably hid in another room as best they could while the man took care of business. Three, I like his use of environmental weapons. Guns aren't always allowed or accessible, so take a look around you right now and decide what can be used as a weapon should you be attacked. Hammers, chairs, screwdrivers, broom handles, kitchen knives, even a can of spray cleaner or insect spray can help to incapacitate the threat. Environmental weapons aren't as powerful as your gun, but they're better than nothing and can sometimes be used to fight your way to your firearm. All in all, he did a great job protecting his family. But here are a few things he could have done to make it easier. One, store your firearm inside your house, not in your car. In the car, it's not really secure. People break into cars all the time. When you hear the sound of breaking glass at 3 a.m., you need to have a gun right away, not 30 seconds from now. You don't know when or where the break-in will occur, so please consider having several gun safes strategically located around the house. The safe should be secure, but also quick access. A gun is useless if you can't get to it in time. And two, make sure your spouse is trained and armed. If the man had been killed, the wife could have been in a defensive position with a handgun, prepared as the last line of defense to protect her baby. Better yet, prepare a plan of attack, coordinating with both husband and wife. That would double your firepower and enhance your chances of successfully repelling the invaders. Bottom line is make a plan and have the tools and the training to take out the trash.
I love it.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. This is your host, Skip Coriel. Now this is the part of the show where I tell you what I really think. A few days ago, I got a call from my old friend Mark Walters, the host of Armed American Radio. It's syndicated in over 200 stations, and you can check it out at armedamericanradio.com. Mark wanted to talk about the upcoming March for Your Lives demonstration, supposedly being organized by high school students from the Parkland, Florida massacre. Here is what their website says. On March 24, the kids and families of March for Our Lives will take to the streets to demand that their lives and safety become a priority and that we end gun violence in our schools and communities. Join the March for Our Lives event near you. Well, folks, I did some research, and there are over 835 event locations across the globe, all allegedly organized by a few high school teenagers. I don't believe it, and neither should you. This event was bought and paid for by Hollywood celebrities, anti-gun organizations, and anti-gun politicians who are simply using these kids as pawns and mouthpieces for their own entertainment and agenda. George Clooney was the first to pony up, and he pledged $500,000 to the cause, quickly followed by Oprah Winfrey to make it an even million. But that wasn't enough money, so they started a GoFundMe website to add another $3.3 million. And as if that wasn't enough, high-end designer Gucci also matched the Clooney's $500,000. Other A-list donors included Steven Spielberg and his wife Kate Capshaw, Jimmy Fallon, Jeffrey Katzenberg and his wife Marilyn, John Legend and his wife Chrissy Teigen, Dwayne Wade and wife Gabrielle Union, and the cast of Modern Family. And the list goes on and on. Fellow gun owners, we are in trouble. We allowed ourselves to be lulled into a false sense of security at the election of Donald Trump. That's right, the same Donald Trump who is now considering more gun control laws. It seems like everyone with two nickels to rub together is now gunning for every gun owner in America. Folks, here's the deal with liberals. They never quit. They never give up. They never change. If you think your gun rights are safe, then your head is in an alternate universe where the sun don't shine. You need to step back and look at what's happening here and take it very seriously, because if you don't, then ironically, the only ones with guns will be criminals and the celebrities and politicians who made them illegal for you and I to possess. That's us, the little guy, John Q. Citizen. Or should I say John Q. Subject? I remember back in 2009, after Obama was elected, that gun owners were fired up and worried about losing their Second Amendment rights. They called for a march on Washington, D.C., just like the one the kids from Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School are organizing right now. It will be held in front of the White House and at 835 locations worldwide. And they're already planning a follow-up event on April 20, which is the anniversary of the Columbine Massacre. Here's something that will put it all in perspective for you. Back in 2009, I created and organized the Second Amendment March for the sole purpose of marching on D.C. for our gun rights. It took me almost a year and a half working full-time along with about 200 volunteers to organize the event. Not a single major celebrity joined us. Not a single major celebrity donated even a penny. We couldn't even get minor celebrities to help us out. We couldn't even get the NRA to help. The leadership there wrote us a letter and told us that marches don't help in the advancement of gun rights. Now, isn't that ironic? Marches can't advance gun rights, but they sure as heck can be used to take them away from us. In the end, we worked our butts off, but we're still only able to raise less than $100,000 for the event. On the day of the event, only 3,000 people showed up to support the Second Amendment. And that is why you should be afraid. The anti-gunners are fired up. They can smell blood, and they're going after the jugular. Once and for all, they're determined to end private gun ownership here in America, the last bastion of freedom on the planet. And quite frankly, folks, I think they have a better than 50-50 chance of doing it. Now, some of you are smugly saying to yourselves, they can have my gun when they pry it from my cold, dead hands. Fellow gun owners, by the time it gets to that point, the battle is already lost. Do you really want to die for your gun rights? Do you? I submit that maybe a better tact might be to get yourself involved politically so that you never have to die fighting against your own government. And that has always been a very realistic fear, hasn't it? Since most murders aren't committed by serial killers or active shooters, but by the very governments we elect to take care of us. The upcoming fall election doesn't look good for gun owners. The far left is already salivating, and they believe strongly that they'll take control of the House of Representatives. I, for one, think they can do it, especially if the rest of us, the majority, remain complacent and disengaged from politics. Think about it. They have almost unlimited funds. They have Hollywood. They have the unrelenting power of the mainstream media. That reminds me of the movie The Lord of the Rings. Elrond, the Lord of the Elves, and Gandalf, the Wizard, are discussing what to do with the One Ring of Power. Who should take it into the fires of Mount Doom to destroy it? Gandalf says, "We can ask no more of Frodo." But Lord Elrond counters by saying, "Gandalf, the enemy is moving. Sauron's forces are massing in the east. His eye is fixed on Rivendell. And Saruman, you tell me, has betrayed us. Our list of allies grows thin." Folks, I've got this bad feeling in the pit of my stomach. I can see the goblin-like politicians massing in the east, while orcs of Hollywood attack us from the west. Like a vice, the heartland is being squeezed, compressed, and destroyed from both sides. But still, no one rises up to fight. They stay in the comfort of their homes to watch the progress of their own demise on CNN. It's not looking too good, folks. And here's a newsflash. Donald Trump is not Aragorn the hero. In fact, he might turn out to be the white hand of Saruman, who has turned against us. All I see right now are a couple of hairy-footed hobbits who don't know the first thing about fighting. I'll be watching the March for Your Lives event on television, but here's my guess. It will be a smashing success, simply because they have control of all the things I didn't have back in 2010. They have unlimited funds, unlimited free publicity, and the power of Hollywood lined up behind them. No, folks. It's not looking very good at all. Is darkness and Lord Sauron about to spread across the heartland? I guess we'll find out. But one thing is for certain. Gun-owning Americans are nervous right now, and they should be. They should be afraid. They should be very afraid. And that's what I think. Well, folks, I'm sorry to paint such a bleak picture, but that's the way I see it. How could we see it any way else? It'll be interesting to see what happens in the next couple of months. And it'll be more interesting to see what happens in the fall. Over the past 10 years, we have advanced our gun rights. Even while Barack Obama was president, we advanced our gun rights. We advanced our agenda. Why? Because ordinary Americans, conservative gun owners like you and I, we were afraid, so we got involved. Now we're not afraid, so we're not involved. It's a foregone conclusion that if you don't show up to the fight, you lose the battle. So I implore all of you to get back in the fight. Stop sitting around on your butt and being selfish. Well, I guess that about wraps up our time here. We had a great show today. What can you do between now and next week? Head on out to Amazon.com. Get my book, Civilian Combat, The Concealed Carry Book by Skip Coriel. If you don't have your CPL, get it. Get it now. It's one way of standing up and being counted to the politicians. Also, go to peterheck.com and check out all things Peter Heck. He's a great guy, and he deserves your support. Okay, folks, that about wraps it up for this week's episode of the Home Defense Show. Until next week, remember, your purpose in life is to find something greater than yourself and serve it. Always remember, God, family, country, in that order. It's important how you live, but it's equally important how you die. Your family and the ones you love need your protection, so train, always train, stay alert, stay alive. Until next week on the Home Defense Show, this is your host, Skip Coriel. God bless you, God bless your family, and God bless America.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Home Defense Show. Now, get out there and protect the ones you love. We'll see you next week with more of the best in home defense.
Bye-bye, boys!
Have fun storming the castle!